loved by my mother and my teachers, especially Mrs. Wilcox, my third grade teacher, who hugged me and said she'd miss me on the day school let out. I was loved by my best friends, Frankie Ryder and Scott Abramowitz, although, of course, we didn't talk or even think about it that way. And don't forget Lily Reinhardt, who once put a big smackaroo on my mouth. She also gave me a Hallmark card before I changed schools. It had a sad-looking puppy on the front, and inside it said, "I'll miss you every day you're away." She signed it with a little heart over the I in her name, also X's and O's. Liz at least liked me, at least for a while, I'm sure of it, but that began to change after Cobblestone Cottage. That was when she started to see me as a freak of nature. That was when Liz started to be scared of me. And it's hard to like what you're scared of. Maybe impossible. Although she thought 9 was old enough for me to walk home from school by myself, Liz sometimes came for me instead of Mom if Liz was working what she called the swing shift, which started at 4 in the morning and ended at noon. It was a shift detectives tried to avoid, but Liz got it quite a bit. That was another thing I never wondered about then, but later, there it is again, right. I realized that she wasn't exactly liked by her bosses or trusted. It didn't have anything to do with the relationship she had with my mother. When it came to sex, the NYPD was slowly moving into the 21st century. It wasn't the drinking, either, because she wasn't the only cop who liked to put it away. But certain people she worked with had begun to suspect that Liz was a dirty cop. And, spoiler alert, they were right. 17. I need to tell you about two particular times Liz got me after school. On both occasions, she was in her car, not the one we took out to Cobblestone Cottage, but the one she called her personal. The first time was in 2011, while she and Mom were still a thing. The second was in 2013, a year or so after they stopped being a thing. I'll get to that, but first things first. I came out of school that day in March with my backpack slung over just one shoulder, which was how the cool sixth grade boys did it, and Liz was waiting for me at the curb in her Honda Civic. On the yellow part of the curb, as a matter of fact, which was for handicapped people, but she had her little police officer on call sign for that, which you could argue should have told me something about her character, even at the tender age of 11. I got in, trying not to wrinkle my nose at the smell of stale cigarette smoke that not even the little pine tree air freshener hanging from the rearview mirror could hide. By then, thanks to the secret of Roanoke, we had our own apartment and didn't have to live in the agency anymore, so I was expecting a ride home, but Liz turned toward downtown instead. "Where are we going?" I asked.
"Little field trip, champ," she said. "You'll see."
The field trip was to Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx, final resting place of Duke Ellington, Herman Melville, and Bartholomew Bat Masterson, among others. I know about them because I looked it up and later wrote a report about Woodlawn for school. Liz drove in from Webster Avenue and then just started cruising up and down the lanes. It was nice, but it was also a little scary.
"Do you know how many people are planted here?"
she asked. And when I shook my head,
300,000. Less than the population of Tampa, but not by much. I checked it out on Wikipedia.
"Why are we here?" "Because it's interesting, but I've got homework." This wasn't a lie, but I only had like a half hour's worth. It was a bright, sunshiny day, and she seemed normal enough. Just Liz, my mom's friend. But still, this was sort of a freaky field trip. She totally ignored the homework gambit.
"People are being buried here all the time. Look to your left."
She pointed and slowed from 25 or so to a bare creep. Where she was pointing, people were standing around a coffin placed over an open grave. Some kind of minister was standing at the head of the grave with an open book in his hand. I knew he wasn't a rabbi because he wasn't wearing a beanie. Liz stopped the car. Nobody at the service paid any attention. They were absorbed in whatever the minister was saying.
"You see dead people," she said. "I accept that now. I'd not too after what happened at Thomas's place. Do you see any here?"
"No," I said, more uneasy than ever. Not because of Liz, but because I'd just gotten the news that we were currently surrounded by 300,000 dead bodies. Even though I knew the dead went away after a few days, a week at most, I almost expected to see them standing beside their graves, or right on top of them, then maybe converging on us like in a fucking zombie movie.
Are you sure?
I looked at the funeral, or graveside service, or whatever you call it. The minister must have started a prayer because all the mourners had bowed their heads. All except one, that was. He was just standing there and looking unconcernedly up at the sky. That guy in the blue suit, I said finally. The one who's not wearing a tie. He might be dead, but I can't be sure. If there's nothing wrong with them when they die, nothing that shows, they look pretty much like anyone else.
I don't see a man without a tie, she said.
Well, okay then, he's dead.
Do they always come to their burials? Liz asked.
How should I know? This is my first graveyard, Liz. I saw Mrs. Burkett at her funeral, but I don't know about the graveyard, because me and Mom didn't go to that part, we just went home.
But you see him.
She was staring at the funeral party, like she was in a trance.
You could go over there and talk to him, the way you talked to Regis Thomas that day.
I'm not going over there! I don't like to say I squawked this, but I pretty much did. In front of all his friends, in front of his wife and kids, you can't make me.
Mellow out, champ, she said, and ruffled my hair. Just trying to get it straight in my mind. How did he get here, do you think? Because he shouldn't take an Uber.
I don't know. I want to go home.
Pretty soon, she said.
And we continued our cruise of the cemetery, passing tombs and monuments and about a billion regular gravestones. We passed three more graveside ceremonies in progress. Two small, like the first one, where the star of the show was attending sight unseen, and one humongous one, where about 200 people were gathered on a hillside. And the guy in charge, beanie, check, plus a cool-looking shawl, was using a microphone. Each time Liz asked me if I could see the dead person, and each time I told her I didn't have a clue.
You probably wouldn't tell me if you did, she said. I can tell you're in a pissy mood.
I'm not in a pissy mood.
You are, though, and if you tell T I brought you out here, we'll probably have a fight. I don't suppose you could tell her we went for ice cream, could you?
We were almost back to Webster Avenue by then, and I was feeling a little better, telling myself Liz had a right to be curious that anyone would be. Maybe if you actually bought me one.
Bribery? That's a Class B felony.
She laughed, gave my hair a ruffle, and we were pretty much all right again. We left the cemetery, and I saw a young woman in a black dress sitting on a bench and waiting for her bus. A little girl in a white dress and shiny black shoes was sitting beside her. The girl had golden hair and rosy cheeks and a hole in her throat. I waved to her. Liz didn't see me do it. She was waiting for a break in traffic so she could make her turn. I didn't tell her what I saw. That night, Liz left after dinner to either go to work or go back to her own place, and I almost told my mother. In the end, I didn't. In the end, I kept the little girl with the golden hair to myself. Later, I would think that the hole in her throat was from the little girl choking on food, and that they cut into her throat so she could breathe, but it was too late. She was sitting there beside her mother, and her mother didn't know. But I knew. I saw. When I waved to her, she waved back.
18.
While we were eating our ice cream at Lickety Split, Liz phoned my mother to tell her where we were and what we were up to. Liz said,
"It must be so strange what you can do. So weird. Doesn't it freak you out?"
I thought of asking her if it freaked her out to look up at night and see the stars and know they go on forever and ever, but didn't bother. I just said no. You get used to marvelous things. You take them for granted. You can try not to, but you do. There's too much wonder, that's all. It's everywhere.
19.
I'll tell you about the other time Liz picked me up from school very soon, but first I have to tell you about the day they broke up. That was a scary morning, believe me. I woke up that day even before my alarm clock went off because Mom was yelling. I'd heard her mad before, but never that mad.
You brought it into the apartment where I live with my son?
Liz answered something, but it was a little more than a mumble, and I couldn't hear.
Do you think that matters to me?
Mom shouted.
On the cop shows, that's what they call serious weight. I could go to jail as an accessory. Don't be dramatic,
Liz said, louder now.
There was never any chance of—
That doesn't matter, Mom yelled.
It was here. It still is. Here, on the fucking table, beside the fucking sugar bowl. You brought drugs into my house. Serious weight. Would you stop saying that? This isn't an episode of Law and Order.
Now Liz was also getting loud, getting mad. I stood with one ear pressed against my bedroom door, barefoot and dressed in my pajamas, my heart starting to pound. This wasn't a discussion or even an argument. This was more. Worse.
If you hadn't been going through my pockets, searching your stuff, is that what you think? I was trying to do you a favor. I was going to take your extra uniform coat to the cleaners along with my wool skirt. How long has it been there? Only a little while. The guy it belongs to is out of town. He's going to be back tomorrow. How long?
Liz's reply was again too low for me to hear.
Then why bring it here? I don't understand that. Why not put it in the gun safe at your place?
She stopped.
Don't what? Don't actually have a gun safe, and there have been break-ins in my building. Besides, I was going to be here. We were going to spend the week together. I thought it would save me a trip. Save you a trip.
To this, Liz made no reply.
No gun safe in your apartment. How many other things have you been lying to me about?
Mom didn't sound mad anymore, at least not right then. She sounded hurt, like she wanted to cry. I felt like going out and telling Liz to leave my mother alone, even if my mother had started it by finding whatever she'd found, the serious weight. But I just stood there, listening. Trembling, too. Liz mumbled some more.
Is this why you're in trouble at the department? Are you using as well as, I don't know, couriering the stuff, distributing the stuff? I'm not using and I'm not distributing. Well, you're passing it on.
Mom's voice was rising again.
That sounds like distributing to me.
Then she went back to what was really troubling her. Well, not the only thing, but the one that was troubling her the most.
You brought it into my apartment where my son is. You lock your gun in your car. I always insisted on that. But now I find 2 pounds of cocaine in your spare jacket.
She actually laughed, but not the way people do when something is funny.
Your spare police jacket. It's not 2 pounds,
sounding sulky.
I grew up weighing meat in my father's market, Mom said. I know 2 pounds when I've got it in my hand. I'll get it out, she said, right now. You do that, Liz, post haste, and you can come back to get your things by appointment when I'm here and Jamie's not. Otherwise, never. You don't mean that,
Liz said, but even through the door, I could tell she didn't believe what she was saying.
I absolutely do. I'm going to do you a favor and not report what I found to your watch captain, but if you ever show your face here again, except for that one time to pick up your shit, I will. That's a promise. You're throwing me out, really? Really, take your dope and fuck off.
Liz started to cry. That was horrible. Then after she was gone, Mom started to cry, and that was even worse. I went out into the kitchen and hugged her.
How much of that did you hear?
Mom asked, and before I could answer,
all of it, I imagine. I'm not going to lie to you, Jamie, or gloss it over. She had dope, a lot of dope, and I never want you to say a word about it, okay?
Was it really cocaine? I had also been crying, but didn't realize it until I heard my voice come out all husky.
It was, and since you already know so much, I might as well tell you, I tried it in college just a couple of times. I tasted what was in the baggie I found, and my tongue went numb. It was coke, all right?
but it's gone. She took it.
Moms know what kids are scared of, if they're good moms. A critic might call that a romantic notion, but I think it's just a practical fact.
She did. And we're fine. It was a nasty way to start the day, but it's over. We'll draw a line under it and move on.
Okay, but is Liz really not your friend anymore?
Mom used a dish towel to wipe her face. I don't think she's been my friend for quite a while now. I just didn't know it. Now, get ready for school.
That night, while I was doing my homework, I heard a glug, glug, glug coming from the kitchen and smelled wine. The smell was a lot stronger than usual, even on nights when Mom and Liz put away a lot of vino. I came out of my room to see if she'd spilled a bottle, although there had been no crash of glass, and saw Mom standing over the sink with a jug of red wine in one hand and a jug of white in the other. She was pouring it down the drain.
Why are you throwing it away? Did it go bad? In a manner of speaking, she said. I think it started to go bad about 8 months ago. It's time to stop.
I found out later that my mother went to AA for a while after she broke up with Liz, then decided she didn't need it.
Old men pissing and moaning about a drink they took 30 years ago, she said.
And I don't think she quit completely, because once or twice I thought I smelled wine on her breath when she kissed me goodnight. Maybe from dinner with a client. If she kept a bottle in the apartment, I never knew where she stashed it, not that I looked very hard. What I do know is that in the years that followed, I never saw her drunk, and I never saw her hungover. That was good enough for me.
20.
I didn't see Liz Dutton for a long time after that. A year, maybe a little more. I missed her at first, but that didn't last long. When the feeling came, I just reminded myself she screwed my mom over, and big time. I kept waiting for Mom to have another sleepover friend, but she didn't. Like, ever. I asked her once, and she said,
"Once burned, twice shy. We're okay, that's the important thing."
And we were. Thanks to Regis Thomas, 27 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, and a couple new clients, one of them discovered by Barbara Means, who was by then full-time and actually ended up getting her name on the door in 2017, the agency was back on a firm footing. Uncle Harry returned to the care home in Bayonne, same facility, new management, which wasn't great, but better than it had been. Mom was no longer cross in the morning, and she got some new clothes.
"Have to," she told me once that year. "I've lost 15 pounds of wine weight."
I was in middle school by then, which sucked in some respects, was okay in others, and came with one excellent perk. Student athletes with no class during the last period of the day could go to the gym, the art room, the music room, or sign out. I only played JV basketball and the season was over, but I still qualified. Some days I checked out the art room because this foxy chick named Marie O'Malley occasionally hung out there. If she wasn't working on one of her watercolors, I just went home. Walked, if it was nice. On my own, it should go without saying. Took the bus, if it was nasty. On the day Liz Dutton came back into my life, I didn't even bother looking for Marie because I'd gotten a new Xbox for my birthday and I wanted to hit it. I was all the way down the walk and shouldering my backpack, no more one-armed tote for me, sixth grade was in the prehistoric past, when she called to me.
"Hey champ, what's the haps, Bambino?"
She was leaning against her personal, legs crossed at the ankles, wearing jeans and a low-cut blouse. It was a blazer over the blouse instead of a parka, but it still had NYPD on the breast, and she flapped it open in the old way to show me her shoulder holster. Only this time it wasn't empty.
"Hi, Liz,"
I mumbled. I looked down at my shoes and made a right turn onto the street.
"Hold on, I need to talk to you."
I stopped, but I didn't turn back to her. Like she was Medusa, and one look at her snaky head would turn me to stone.
"I don't think I should. Mom would be mad."
"She doesn't need to know. Turn around, Jamie, please. Looking at nothing but your back is just about killing me."
She sounded like she really felt bad, and that made me feel bad. I turned around. The blazer was closed again, but I could see the bulge of her gun just the same.
"I want you to take a ride with me."
Not a good idea, I said. I was thinking of this girl named Ramona Scheinberg. She was in a couple of my classes at the beginning of the year, but then she was gone, and my friend Scott Abramowitz told me her father snatched her during a custody suit and took her to some place where there was no extradition. Scott said he hoped it was at least a place with palm trees.
I need what you can do, champ, she said. I really do.
I didn't reply to that, but she must have seen I was wavering because she gave me a smile. It was a nice one that lit up those gray eyes of hers. They weren't a bit sleety that day.
Maybe it'll come to nothing, but I want to try. I want you to try.
Try what? She didn't answer, not then, just held out a hand to me.
I helped your mother when Regis Thomas died. Won't you help me now?
Technically, I was the one who helped my mother that day. Liz just gave us a quick ride up the Sprainbrook Parkway, but she had stopped to buy me a Whopper when Mom just wanted to push on. And she gave me the rest of her Coke when my mouth was so dry from talking. So I got in the car. I didn't feel good about it, but I did it. Adults have power, especially when they beg. And that's what Liz was doing. I asked Liz where we were going, and she said Central Park to start with, maybe a couple of other places after that. I said if I didn't get home by 5, Mom would be worried. Liz told me she'd try to get me back before then, but this was very important. That's when she told me what it was about.
21.
The guy who called himself Thumper set his first bomb in Eastport, a Long Island town not all that far from Spionk, one-time home of Uncle Harry's Cabin. Literary joke. This was in 1996. Thumper dropped a stick of dynamite hooked up to a timer in a trash can outside the restrooms of the King Cullen supermarket. The timer was nothing but a cheap alarm clock, but it worked. The dynamite went off at 9 p.m. just as the supermarket was closing. 3 people were hurt, all store employees. 2 of them suffered only superficial injuries, but the 3rd guy was coming out of the men's when the bomb blew. He lost an eye and his right arm up to the elbow. 2 days later, a note came into the Suffolk County Police Department. It was typed on an IBM Selectric. It said, "How do you like my work so far? More to come. Thumper." Thumper set 19 bombs before he actually killed anybody.
19, Liz exclaimed. And it wasn't as if he wasn't trying. He set them all over the 5 boroughs and a couple in New Jersey, Jersey City, and Fort Lee for good measure. All dynamite, Canadian manufacture.
But the score of the maimed and wounded was high. It had been closing in on 50 when he finally killed the man who picked the wrong Lexington Avenue payphone. Every kaboom was followed by a note to the police responsible for the area where said kaboom occurred, and the notes were always the same. "How do you like my work so far? More to come. Thumper." Before Richard Scalise, that was the payphone man's name, a long period of time went by before each new explosion. The 2 closest were 6 weeks apart. The longest delay was close to a year. But after Scalise, Thumper sped up. The bombs became bigger and the timers more sophisticated. 19 explosions between 1996 and 2009, 20 counting the payphone bomb. Between 2010 and the pretty May day in 2013 when Liz came back into my life, he set 10 more, wounding 20 and killing 3. By then, Thumper wasn't just an urban legend or a New York One staple. By then, he was nationwide. He was good at avoiding security cameras, and those he couldn't avoid just showed a guy in a coat, sunglasses, and a Yankees cap pulled down low. He kept his head low, too. Some white hair showed around the sides and back of the cap, but that could have been a wig. Over 17 years of his reign of terror, 3 different task forces were organized to catch him. The first one disbanded during a long break in his reign when the police assumed he was finished. The second disbanded after a big shakeup in the department. The
The third started in 2011 when it became clear Thumper had gone into overdrive. Liz didn't tell me all this on our way to Central Park. I found it out later, as I did so many other things. Finally, 2 days ago, they got the break in the case they'd been waiting and hoping for. Son of Sam was caught by a parking ticket. Ted Bundy got caught because he forgot to put his headlights on. Thumper, real name Kenneth Allen Terrio, was nailed because a building super had a minor accident on trash day. He was wheeling a dolly loaded with garbage cans down an alley to the pickup point out front. He hit a pothole and one of the cans spilled. When he went to clean up the mess, he found a bundle of wires and a yellow scrap of paper with Kaneko printed on it. He might not have called the police if that had been all, but it wasn't. Attached to one of the wires was a Dino Nobel blasting cap. We got to Central Park and parked with a bunch of regular cop cars. Another thing I found out later is that Central Park has its own precinct, the 22nd. Liz put her little cop sign on the dashboard, and we walked down 86th Street for a little while before turning onto a path that led to the Alexander Hamilton Monument. That's one thing I didn't find out later. I just read the fucking sign or plaque, whatever.
The super took a picture of the wires, the scrap of paper, and the blasting cap with his phone, but the task force didn't get it until the next day.
Yesterday, I said.
Right. As soon as we saw it, we knew we had our guy.
Sure, because of the blasting cap.
Yeah, but not just that. The scrap of paper? Kaneko is a Canadian company that manufactures dynamite. We got a list of all the building's tenants and eliminated most of them without any field work because we knew we were looking for a male, probably single, and probably white. There were only 6 tenants who checked all those boxes and only one guy who'd ever worked in Canada.
Googled him, right? I was getting interested.
Right you are. Among other things, we found Kenneth Terrio has dual citizenship, U.S. and Canada. He worked all sorts of construction jobs up there in the Great White North, plus fracking and oil shale sites. He was Thumper. Pretty much had to be.
I only got a quick look at Alexander Hamilton, just enough to read the sign and note his fancy pants. Liz had me by the hand and was leading me toward a path a little way beyond the statue, pulling me, actually.
We went in with a SWAT team, but his crib was empty. Well, not empty, all his stuff was there, but he was gone. The super didn't keep his big discovery to himself, unfortunately, although he was told to. He blabbed to some of the residents, and the word spread. One of the things we found in the apartment was an IBM Selectric.
That's a typewriter? She nodded.
Those babies used to come with different type elements for different fonts. The one in the machine matched Thumper's notes.
Before we get to the path and the bench that wasn't there, I need to tell you some other stuff I found out later. She was telling the truth about how Terrio finally tripped over his dick, but she kept talking about we. We this and we that, but Liz wasn't a part of the Thumper task force. She had been part of the second task force, the one that ended in a big departmental shakeup when everybody was running around like chickens with their heads cut off. But by 2013, all Liz Dutton had left in the NYPD was a toehold, and only that much because cops have a kick-ass union. The rest of her was already out the door. Internal affairs was circling like buzzards around fresh roadkill, and on the day she picked me up from school, she wouldn't have been put on a task force dedicated to catching serial litter bugs. She needed a miracle, and I was supposed to be it.
By today,
she went on,
every cop in the boroughs had Kenneth Terrio's name and description. Every way out of the city was being monitored by human eyeballs as well as cameras, and I'm sure you know there's plenty of cameras. Nailing this guy, dead or alive, became our number one priority because we were afraid he might decide to go out in a blaze of glory. Maybe setting off a bomb in front of Saks Fifth Avenue or in Grand Central. Only he did us a favor.
She stopped and pointed at a spot beside the path. I noticed the grass was beaten down as if a lot of people had been standing there.
He came into the park, he sat down on a bench, and he blew his brains out with a Ruger 45 ACP.
I looked at the spot, awestruck.
The bench is at the NYPD Forensics Lab in Jamaica, but this is where he did it. So, here's the big question. Do you see him? Is he here?
I looked around. I had no clue what Kenneth Allen Terrio looked like, but if he'd blown his brains out, I didn't think I could miss him. I saw some kids throwing a frisbee for their dog to chase. The dog was off his leash, a Central Park no-no. I saw a couple of lady runners, a couple of boarders, a couple of old guys further down the path reading newspapers, but I didn't see any guy with a hole in his head, and I told her that.
Fuck, Liz said. Well, all right. We got two more chances, at least that I can see. He worked as an orderly at City of Angels Hospital on 70th. Quite a come down from his construction days, but he was in his 70s, and the apartment building where he lived is in Queens. Which do you think, champ?
I think I want to go home. He might be any place.
Really? Didn't you say they hang around places where they spent time when they were alive? Before they, I don't know, pop off for good?
I couldn't remember if I'd said that to her exactly, but it was true. Still, I was feeling more and more like Ramona Scheinberg. Kidnapped, in other words.
Why bother? He's dead, right? Case closed.
Not quite. She bent down to look me in the eye. She didn't have to bend so far in 2013 because I was getting taller. Nowhere near the 6 feet I am now, but a couple of inches.
There was a note pinned to his shirt. It said, "There's one more, and it's a big one. Fuck you, and see you in hell." It was signed Thumper.
Well, that kind of changed things. 22. We went to City of Angels first because it was closer. There was no guy with a hole in his head out front, just some smokers, so we went in through the emergency room entrance. A lot of people were sitting around in there, and one guy was bleeding from the head. The wound looked like a laceration to me rather than a bullet hole, and he was younger than Liz said Kenneth Terrio was, but I asked Liz if she could see him, just to be sure. She said she could. We went to the desk where Liz showed her badge and identified herself as an NYPD detective. She asked if there was a room where the custodians put their stuff and changed their clothes for their shifts. The lady at the desk said there was, but the other police had already been there and cleaned out Terrio's locker. Liz asked if they were still there, and the lady said no, the last of them left hours ago.
"I'd like to grab a quick peek anyway," Liz said.
"Tell me how to get there?"
The lady said to take the elevator down to B level and turn right. Then she smiled at me and said,
"Are you helping your mom in her investigations today, young man?"
I thought of saying, "Well, she's not my mom, but I guess I am helping because she hopes that if Mr. Terrio is still hanging around, I'll see him." Of course, that wouldn't fly, so I was stuck. Liz wasn't. She explained that the school nurse thought I might have mono, so this seemed like a chance to get me checked out and visit Terrio's place of work at the same time. Two birds with one stone type of deal.
"You'd probably do better with your own doctor," the desk lady said. "This place is a madhouse today. You'll wait for hours." "And that's probably best," Liz agreed.
I thought how natural she sounded and what a smooth liar she was. I couldn't decide if I was grossed out or admiring. I guess a little of both. The desk lady leaned forward. I was fascinated by how her extremely large bazams shoved her papers forward. It made me think of an icebreaker boat I'd seen in a movie. She lowered her voice.
"Everyone was shocked, let me tell you. Ken was the oldest of all the orderlies and the nicest, hardworking and willing to please. If someone asked him to do something, he was always happy to do it, and with a smile. To think we were working with a killer. Do you know what it proves?"
Liz shook her head, clearly impatient for us to be on our way.
"That you never know," the desk lady said.
She spoke like someone who's imparting a great truth.
"You just never know."
"He was good at covering up, all right,"
Liz said, and I thought, it takes one to know one. In the elevator, I asked,
"If you're on a task force, how come you're not with the task force?" "Don't be dumb, champ. Was I supposed to take you to the task force? Having to make up a story about you at the desk was bad enough."
The elevator stopped.
"If anyone asks about you, remember why you're here?
Mono."
"Right."
But there was no one to ask. The custodian's room was empty. It had yellow tape saying "Police Investigation, Keep Out" across the door. Liz and I ducked under it, her holding my hand. There were benches, a few chairs, and about 24 lockers,
also a fridge, a microwave, and a toaster oven. There was an open box of Pop-Tarts by the toaster oven, and I thought I wouldn't have minded a Pop-Tart just then. But there was no Kenneth Terrio. The lockers had names stuck to them in Dymo tape. Liz opened Terrio's using a handkerchief because of the leftover fingerprint powder. She did it slowly, like she expected him to be hiding inside like the boogeyman in a kid's closet. Terrio was sort of a boogeyman, but he wasn't in there. It was empty. The cops took everything. Liz said fuck again. I looked at my phone to check the time. It was 3:20.
I know, she said.
Her shoulders were slumped, and although I resented the way she'd just scooped me up and taken me away, I couldn't help feeling a little sorry for her. I remembered Mr. Thomas saying my mom looked older, and now I thought my mom's lost friend looked older too. Thinner. And I had to admit I also felt some admiration because she was trying to do the right thing and save lives. She was like the hero of a movie, the lone wolf who means to solve the case on her own. Maybe she did care about the innocent people who might be vaporized in Thumper's last bomb. Probably she did. But I know now she was also concerned with saving her job. I don't like to think it was her major concern, but in light of what happened later, I'll get to it. I have to think it was.
Okay, one more shot, and stop looking at your dumb phone, champ. I know what time it is, and no matter how much trouble you're in, if I don't get you home before your mother shows up, I'll be in more.
She'll probably take Barbara out for a drink before she goes home anyway. Barbara works for the agency now. I don't know why I said that exactly. Because I also wanted to save innocent lives, I suppose. Although that seemed rather academic to me because I didn't think we were going to find Kenneth Terrio. I think it was because Liz looked so beaten down, so backed into a corner.
Well, that's a lucky break, Liz said. All we need is one more.
23. The Frederick Arms was 12 or 14 stories high, gray brick with bars on the windows of the first and second floor apartments. To a kid who grew up in the Palace on Park, it looked more like that Shawshank Redemption prison than an apartment building. And Liz knew right away that we were never going to get inside, let alone to Kenneth Terrio's apartment. The place was swarming with cops. Looky-loos were standing in the middle of the street, as close to the police sawhorse barricades as they could get, snapping photos. TV news vans were parked on both sides of the block with their antennas up and cables snaking everywhere. There was even a Channel 4 helicopter hovering overhead.
Look, I said, Stacey Ann Conway, she's on New York One. Ask me if I give a shit, Liz said.
I didn't. We'd been lucky not to run into reporters at Central Park or City of Angels, and I realized the only reason we hadn't was because they were all here. I looked at Liz and saw a tear trickling down one of her cheeks.
Maybe we can go to his funeral, I said. Maybe he'll be there? He'll probably be cremated, privately, at the city's expense. No relatives. He outlived them all. I'll take you home, champ. Sorry to drag you all this way.
That's okay, I said, and patted her hand. I knew Mom wouldn't like me doing that, but Mom wasn't there. Liz pulled a U-turn and headed back toward the Queensboro Bridge. A block away from the Frederick Arms, I glanced at a little grocery on my side and said,
Oh my God, there he is.
She snapped a wide-eyed glance at me.
Are you sure? Are you sure, Jamie?
I leaned forward and vomited between my sneakers. That was all the answer she needed.
24.
I can't really say if he was as bad as the Central Park man. That was a long time ago. He could have been worse. Once you've seen what can happen to a human body that suffered an act of violence, accident, suicide, murder, maybe it doesn't even matter. Kenneth Terrio, alias Thumper, was bad, okay? Really bad. There were benches on either side of the grocery's door so people could eat the snacks they bought, I suppose. Terrio was sitting on one of them with his hands on the thighs of his khaki pants. People were passing by, headed for whatever they were headed for. A black kid with a skateboard under his arm went into the store. A lady came out with a steaming paper cup of coffee. Neither of them glanced at the bench where Terrio was sitting. He must have been right-handed because that side of his head didn't look too bad. There was a hole in his temple, maybe the size of a dime, maybe a little smaller, surrounded by a dark corona that was either bruising or gunpowder. Probably gunpowder. I doubt if his body had time to muster enough blood to make a bruise. The real damage was on the left, where the bullet exited. The hole on that side was almost as big as a dessert plate and surrounded by irregular fangs of bone. The flesh on his head was swelled like from a gigantic infection. His left eye had been yanked sideways and bulged from its socket. Worst of all, gray stuff had dripped down his cheek. That was his brain. "Don't stop," I said. "Just keep going." The smell of puke was strong in my nose, and the taste of it was in my mouth, all slimy. "Please, Liz, I can't." She swerved to the curb in front of a fire hydrant near the end of the block instead.
"You have to, and I have to. Sorry, champ, but we have to know. Now pull yourself together so people don't stare at us and think I've been abusing you."
"But you are," I thought.
"And you won't stop until you get what you want."
The taste in my mouth was the ravioli I'd eaten in the school caf. As soon as I realized that, I opened the door, leaned out, and puked some more. Like on the day of the Central Park Man when I never made it to Lily's birthday party at Fancy Schmancy Wave Hill. That was deja vu I could have done without.
"Champ. Champ."
I turned to her and she was holding out a wad of Kleenex. "Show me a woman without Kleenex in her purse and I'll show you no one at all."
"Wipe your mouth and then get out of the car. Try to look normal. Let's get this done."
I could see she meant it. We weren't going to leave until she had what she wanted.
"Man up," I thought. "I can do this. I have to because lives are at stake."
I wiped my mouth and got out. Liz put her little sign on the dashboard, the police version of get out of jail free, and came around to where I was standing on the sidewalk, staring into a laundromat at a woman folding clothes. That wasn't very interesting, but at least it kept me from looking at the ruined man up the street. For the time being, anyway. Soon, I'd have to. Worse, oh God, I'd have to talk to him. If he even could talk. I held out my hand without thinking. 13 was probably too old to be holding hands with a woman the people passing by would assume was my mother, if they bothered thinking about us at all. But when she took it, I was glad. Glad as hell. We started back to the store. I wished we'd had miles to walk, but it was only half a block.
"Where is he exactly?"
she asked in a low voice. I risked a look to make sure he hadn't moved. Nope, he was still on the bench. And now I could look directly into the crater where there had once been thoughts. His ear was still on, but it was crooked, and I found myself remembering a Mr. Potato Head I'd had when I was 4 or 5. My stomach clenched again.
"Get it together, champ. Don't call me that anymore," I managed to say. "I hate it." "Duly noted. Where is he?"
"Sitting on the bench."
"The one on this side of the door, or this side?"
"Yeah."
I was looking at him again. We were so close now, I couldn't help it. And I saw an interesting thing. A man came out of the store with a newspaper under his arm and a hot dog in one hand. The hot dog was in one of those foil bags that's supposed to keep them hot. Believe that, and you'll believe the moon is made of green cheese. He started to sit down on the other bench, already pulling his hot dog out of the bag. Then he stopped, looked either at me and Liz or the other bench, and walked on down the block to eat his pup somewhere else. He didn't see Terrio. He would have run if he had, most likely screaming his head off, but I think he felt him. No, I don't just think it. I know it. I wish I'd paid more attention at that time, but I was upset, as I'm sure you understand, and if you don't, you're an idiot. Terrio turned his head. It was a relief because the move hid the worst of the exit wound. It wasn't a relief because his face was normal on one side and all bloated out of shape on the other.
like that guy Two-Face in the Batman comics. Worst of all, now he was looking at me. I see them, and they know I do. It's always been that way.
Ask him where the bomb is, Liz said.
She was speaking from the corner of her mouth like a spy in a comedy. A woman with a baby in a papoose carrier came up the sidewalk. She gave me a distrustful glance, maybe because I looked funny or maybe because I smelled of puke, maybe both. I was past the point of caring. All I wanted to do was what Liz Dutton had brought me here to do, then get the fuck out. I waited until the woman with the baby went inside.
Where's the bomb, Mr. Terrio? The last bomb.
At first, he didn't reply, and I was thinking, okay, his brains are blown out, he's here, but he can't talk, end of story. Then he spoke up. The words didn't exactly match the movements of his mouth, and it came to me that he was talking from somewhere else. Like on a time delay from hell. That scared the shit out of me. If I'd known that was when something awful came into him and took him over, it would have been even worse. But do I know that? Like, for sure? No, but I almost know it.
I don't want to tell you.
That stunned me to silence. I had never gotten such a reply from a dead person before. True, my experience was limited, but up until then, I would have said they had to tell you the truth, first time, every time.
What did he say?
Liz asked, still talking from the corner of her mouth. I ignored her and spoke to Terrio again. Since there was no one around, I spoke louder, enunciating every word the way you would for a person who is deaf or only had a shaky grasp on English.
Where is the last bomb?
I also would have said that the dead can't feel pain, that they are beyond it. And Terrio certainly did not seem to be suffering from the cataclysmic self-inflicted wound in his head, but now his half-bloated face twisted, as if I were burning him or stabbing him in the belly instead of just asking him a question.
Don't want to tell you.
What did he...
Liz began again, but then the lady with the baby came back out. She had a lottery ticket. The baby and the papoose had a Kit Kat finger, which he was smearing all over his face. Then he looked at the bench where Terrio was sitting and started crying. The mom must have thought her kid was looking at me because she gave me another glance, mega distrustful this time, and hurried on her way.
Champ, Jamie, I mean, shut up, I said.
Then, because my mother would have hated me talking to any grown-up like that,
please.
I looked back to Terrio. His grimace of pain made his ruined face look more ruined than ever, and all at once I decided I didn't care. He had maimed enough people to fill a hospital ward. He had killed people. And if the note he'd pinned to his shirt wasn't a lie, he had died trying to kill even more. I decided I hoped he was suffering.
Where is it, you motherfucker?
He clasped his hands around his middle, bent over like he had cramps, groaned. Then he gave it up.
King Cullen. The King Cullen supermarket in Eastport.
Why?
Seemed right to finish where I started,
he said, and drew a circle in the air with one finger.
Complete the circle.
No, why do it at all? Why set all those bombs?
He smiled, and the way it kind of squelched the bloated side of his face, I still see that, and I'll never be able to unsee it.
Because,
he said.
Because what?
Because I felt like it,
he said. 25. When I told Liz everything Terrio had said, she was excited and nothing else.
I could understand that. She wasn't the one looking at a man who'd pretty much blown off one whole side of his head. She told me she had to go into the store and get some stuff.
And leave me here with him? No, go back down the street. Wait by the car. I'll only be a minute.
Terrio was sitting there, looking at me with the eye that was more or less regular and the one that was all stretched out. I could feel his gaze. It made me think of the time I went to camp and got fleas and had to have this special stinky shampoo like 5 times before they were all gone. Shampoo wouldn't fix the way Terrio made me feel. Only getting away from him would do that, so I did what Liz said. I walked as far as the laundromat and looked in at the woman who was still folding clothes. She saw me and gave me a wave. That brought back the little girl with the hole in her throat and how she had waved to me. And for one horrible moment, I thought the laundromat lady was also dead. Only a dead person wouldn't be folding clothes. They only stood around or sat around like Terrio. So I gave her a return wave. I even tried to smile. Then I turned back to the store. I told myself it was to see if Liz was coming out yet, but that wasn't why. I was looking to see if Terrio was still looking at me. He was. He raised one hand, palm up, 3 fingers tucked into his palm, 1 finger pointing. He curled it once, then twice, very slowly.
Come here, boy.
I walked back, my legs seeming to move of their own accord. I didn't want to, but couldn't seem to help myself.
She doesn't care about you, Kenneth Terrio said. Not a fig, not one single fig. She's using you, boy. Fuck you. We're saving lives.
There was no one passing by, but even if somebody had been, he or she wouldn't have heard me. He had stolen all of my voice but a whisper.
What she's saving is her job.
You don't know that. You're just some random psycho. Still only a whisper, and I felt on the verge of peeing myself. He didn't say anything, only grinned. That was his answer. Liz came out. She had one of those cheap plastic bags they gave you in stores like that back then. She looked at the bench where the ruined man she couldn't see was sitting, and then at me.
What are you doing here, Jamie, I told you to go to the car.
And before I could answer, quick and harsh like I was a perp in a TV cop show interrogation room.
Did he tell you something else?
That you only care about saving your job, I thought of saying, but maybe I already knew that. No, I said. I want to go home, Liz.
We will. As soon as I do one more thing.
2, actually. I've also got to get your mess out of my car. She put an arm around my shoulders, like a good mom would, and walked me up past the laundromat. I would have waved to the clothes-folding lady again, but her back was turned.
I set something up. I didn't really think I'd have a chance to use it, but thanks to you.
When we were next to her car, she took a flip phone out of the store bag. It was still in its blister pack. I leaned against the window of a shoe repair place and watched her fiddle with it until she got it working. It was now 4:15. If Mom went for a drink with Barbara, we could still get back before she came home, but could I keep the afternoon's adventures to myself? I didn't know, and right then it didn't seem that important. I wished Liz could at least have driven around the corner. I thought she could have smelled my puke for that long after what I'd done for her, but she was too wound up. Plus, there was the bomb to consider. I thought of all the movies I'd seen where the clock is counting down to nothing and the hero is wondering whether to cut the red wire or the blue one. Now she was calling.
Colton.
Yeah, this is...
Shut up! Just listen! It's time to do your thing. You owe me a favor, a big one, and this is it. I'm gonna tell you exactly what to say. Record it, then... Shut up, I said!
She sounded so vicious that I took a step back. I'd never heard Liz like that, and realized that I was seeing her for the first time in her other life, the police life where she dealt with scum buckets.
Record it, then write it down, then call me back. Do it right away.
She waited. I snuck a look back at the store. Both benches were empty. That should have been a relief, but somehow I didn't feel relieved.
Ready? Okay.
Liz closed her eyes, shutting out everything but what she wanted to say. She spoke slowly and carefully.
If Ken Terrio was really Thumper, I'll break in there and say, I want to record this. You wait until I say, go ahead, start again. Got that?
She listened until Colton, whoever he was, said he got it.
You say if Ken Terrio was really Thumper, he was always talking about finishing where he started. I'm calling you because we talked in 2008. I kept your card. You got that?
Another pause. Liz nodding.
Good. I'll say, who is this? And you hang up. Do it right away. This is time sensitive. Screw it up and I'll fuck you big time. You know I can.